This is the Sophia Mare Studios podcast. Hi, I'm Amy.
And I'm Jess, and we're the Rambling Raven Puffs.
Because Potterheads are far too nuanced to be shoved into just one Hogwarts house.
Each week, we will cover two chapters in the saga of our favorite boy wizard.
All the while exploring literary themes, tarot card exercises, and even fanfic speculations.
To connect with us, your fabulous host, and other listeners, join the Discord server for Sophomere Studios.
And to support the podcast and gain access to exclusive bonus features, consider joining our Patreon page at patreon.com/sophiamarestudios, all lowercase.
Thank you for tuning in, grab your butterbeer, and enjoy the show.
Welcome again to the Rambling Raven Puffs. Welcome to the show, everyone. I'm Amy.
And I'm Jess.
And today we are talking Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix, chapters 5 and 6. The titular chapter, The Order of the Phoenix, and The Noble and Most Ancient House of Black. In these chapters, it is Sirius Black, escaped convict versus Weasley matriarch Molly.
Yeah, and Amy and I were talking off mic about cleaning today, and I felt very appropriate today because they do a lot of cleaning in the second chapter that we read.
Oh my god, my husband would rip his hair out if he was given the task. Like, it would be so gross to him.
Same.
Mm-hmm. And what's just interesting about, you know, just from my childhood with these specific chapters, I don't know if it was just 5 and 6, but like there was a specific disc, like when I had the audiobooks of Order of the Phoenix, you know, on CDs, you know, I would listen to this chapter, this section of the book a lot. And so like this is like what I would go to sleep to.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So this specific chapter 5 is like in like probably I could like list it off verbatim.
Oh, okay. Well, good. I'm a first time reader of this chapter, so it's good that you kind of know it in and out. That's interesting. That's interesting.
I don't know why specifically. It probably was because, you know, as a kid, Sirius Black was one of my favorite characters. I was all for like Sirius is a badass, you know, escaped innocent convict.
That he is pretty badass, and we get to learn a lot about his family in these couple chapters. So it's
indeed pretty cool. So we begin with chapter 5, picking up right where we left off, and Harry's like, "You're my dear old mom." "Yeah," said Sirius. "We've been trying to get her down for a month, but we think she's put a permanent sticking charm on the back of the canvas."
There's something for everything in the wizarding world, isn't there? There's a permanent sticking charm. So, interesting.
Yeah, and so what did you think of finding out that this creepy-ass house is Sirius's, like, ancestral home?
It was really interesting, and I think the part that I found the most interesting was the family tree. And is that in this chapter or the next one?
That's next chapter.
Okay. Didn't really expect it to be his ancestral home, but it seems pretty appropriate when we get further in the story that this is his place. And then, you know, Creature is a very interesting character, which I'm sure we'll talk about. But
of course, yeah, because I don't think it was ever spelled out to you before now that Sirius Black was a pure blood, and that the Blacks were a well-known pure blood family.
I don't think so either. I don't think it came out. Next chapter, that was the part that, you know, we'd talk a little bit more about that.
Yeah, so Sirius Black is what they call, you know, a pure blood, but considered a blood traitor.
Yeah, a blood traitor.
Okay, so they mosey on over to the kitchen, and, you know, they're kind of, there are still some documents out, with one of them is like the blueprint of a building. Which building do you think that is?
Hogwarts. It has to be Hogwarts, right?
Yes. And Molly catches Harry looking. He's like, these things need to be cleaned up after the meetings.
Molly is like, man, she is on another level in these two chapters. I don't know. She's pretty wired.
Yeah, she's pretty wired. And we'll get to it. I have many thoughts. So, and it's like, Bill's like, hey, Harry, Mad-Eye did make you come via Greenland then. He tried, said Tonks.
Oh my gosh, yeah, there's a story there. But this is kind of just, again, like the coming together of several characters and sharing some, well, after a big argument, sharing some information, which we'll get there.
But. Yeah. So, and then Bill took out his wand and muttered Evanesco, and the scrolls vanished. And it's so funny because every time Kevin hears the like vanishing charm Evanesco, he goes to like that song.
Waking up inside. Yes. I was just talking about Evanescence the other day. Totally unrelated, but I definitely know Evanescence for sure. They're still around too, still making music. So
nice. So, and Mundungus is here.
Yeah, Mundungus, who Molly is kind of like looking for a reason to kind of chew him out because he dropped the ball on his supposed watch of Harry.
Yeah, and honestly, from, you know, what we understand of Mundungus's character, like, I'm actually pleasantly surprised that Mundungus even had it in him to, like, apologize to Harry.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's pretty big. They don't get
because,
a lot.
Because he's just, you know, as Sirius says, like, Mundungus is, you know, he's a shitty person, but you need that one shitty person who knows like the black market and like the underbelly of the wizarding world so you can have some semblance of what's going on, and they need that right now.
You need that one spy, kind of. I mean, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And let's see. And if you want dinner before midnight, I'll need a hand, Mrs. Weasley. And Tonks is like, I'll help. But she's such a klutz that Mrs. Weasley's just like, no, that's okay.
Yeah, a lot of domestic work going on here by Mrs. Weasley. And maybe I was like very sensitive to that today because I was doing a lot of domestic work. But I was just like, of course, I don't know. You know, Molly Weasley's matronliness, or kind of like the onus of all these chores being put on her, is.
Yeah, like it's, and I feel kind of bad for her. Like, not that, you know, again, we'll get to the argument of Molly, which is a different issue, but I feel bad that she is probably the one taking on, you know, the Order of the Phoenix needs a headquarters, and it needs to be livable and clean, and right. That's an important job, but it's so unglamorous, and Molly's, you know, probably happy to do it. That's her forte, but I doubt she gets a lot of recognition for it.
It's, I think, the assumed responsibility that the maternal figure in this is going to do that type of work. And I mean, and she does, you know, does she, I feel like this is a weird thing to say, but is she, you know, like some of the house elves, is she doing it with a smile in her, you know, heart, or is she doing it begrudgingly because that's the role that she's been given in, you know, this world? I don't know. And whenever there's kind of this this figure in fiction, I'm always a little sensitive to it. Just
because there is something to be said about, like, was it Arthur and Molly's, you know, decision? It wasn't always their decision to have a lot of children, and so it made sense for one parent to be stay at home, or was it from a sense of, we don't believe in, like, you know, abortion or contraception, therefore this is our lot in life, and maybe not being totally happy that this is the cards they were dealt. But yeah, I don't know.
Reproductive rights and politics in Harry Potter, because I wonder if there's like a don't get pregnant charm. That would be pretty sweet.
Yeah. So what we got? And so, let's see. Crookshanks, Hermione's bandy-legged ginger cat, who wound himself once around Harry's legs, purring, then jumped onto Sirius's lap and curled up. Sirius scratched him antlers mindly behind the ears. I have in my notes, I heart the relationship between Sirius and Crookshanks.
Yes, it's very sweet. It's very fun. Because Crookshanks is pretty discerning about who, you know, will get... is Crookshanks a her? Crookshanks a he?
Is a boy, I think.
It's a boy. Okay. His attention. And
and it's also saying, because Crookshanks really was like Sirius's first quote-unquote companion who understood him not to be a malevolent, you know, being, you know, and, you know, and they communicated with each other, you know, as dog and cat. And, you know, Crookshanks was trying to, you know, get, you know, Wormtail for him and, you know, stole the passwords from Neville and gave them to Sirius and all that.
Right. Yeah. Crookshanks and Crookshanks got a lot of hell for that from, you know, especially from Ron back in the couple books ago. But.
Mm-hmm. And so what did you think of Sirius's whole attitude? Like, had a good summer so far? No, it's been lousy. Don't know what you're complaining about myself.
Yeah, this was kind of strange. I mean, I feel like a lot of empathy or in sympathy is given to Harry often. You know, people are always kind of treating him like, you know, a glass doll or something. And Sirius is kind of like not dismissing it so much as like, you know, just kind of like, what does he say? Personally, I'd have welcomed a Dementor attack. A deadly struggle for my soul would have broken the monotony nicely. You think you've had it bad. At least you've been able to get out and about, stretch your legs, get into a few fights. I've been stuck inside for a month. Sirius, haven't we all been stuck inside for a month?
He's bitching after 1 month.
Right. Yeah, we're going on 2 years, honey. So
yeah,
like,
yeah, it is very interesting to think about, you know. So Sirius explains to Harry that he cannot go out, not even in his Animagus form,
right?
Because Wormtail undoubtedly would have told the Death Eaters that Sirius is an Animagus, and so therefore his big disguise, as Sirius calls it, is useless.
Right. Yeah, and, I don't know. Oops.
And so the only thing he's been able to do is offer up, you know, this house that he inherited as the headquarters for the Order of the Phoenix.
I guess, you know, better than nothing keeps him some company. But I don't know. His kind of reaction to Harry was a little intense.
Atypical. It's funny, like, there was something in the slightly flattened tone of voice in which Sirius uttered Dumbledore's name that told Harry that Sirius was not very happy with the headmaster either. Harry felt a sudden upsurge of affection for his godfather and like, yeah, boo Dumbledore.
It's so silly. There's a couple of things that Harry does here. I'm like, it makes him very human, but it's also kind of like, ugh, you kind of hate that reaction. It's later on in the chapter that I have it marked, but yeah.
And at least you know what's been going on. Oh, yeah, said Sirius sarcastically, listening to Snape's reports, having to take all his snide hints that he's out there risking his life while I'm sat on my backside here having a nice comfortable time, asking how the cleaning's going. What cleaning? Asked Harry, trying to make this plate fit for human habitation. So yeah, no one's lived here for like a good decade, you know, since Sirius's mother has died.
And they kind of in the, what does he say? He's, unless you count her old house elf and he's gone around the twist, hasn't cleaned anything in ages. So that's kind of hinting at, you know, because typically in this world, we have house elves to do kind of the keeping the house in order. I don't know if they like hang out after their person dies. I guess it depends on the house elf.
Well, I think, as sad as it is, it was like slaves who were inherited. But the thing is that Sirius, there was still one black left, Sirius, but he was in jail. And so I think the magic was such that Creature was bound to the blacks still.
And Creature was not very motivated to keep things nice for Sirius when he gets back, we learned. So,
yeah. And then we've got Fred, George, no, just carry them. And, you know, because Fred and George are now of age, and so they can use magic whenever they damn well please.
And they're going to use it like crazy, as they have. They are apparating all over the place, and they're trying to help Molly, but not doing a great job.
Yeah, like literally the cauldron of stew comes skidding across the table, and a knife like lands in a menacing quiver right where Sirius's hand was.
That just stressed me out as a person that, like, when I cook, I'm always just like, oh God, please don't tip this over. It's taken so much time. So that whole thing just kind of stressed me out a little bit.
Yeah, no, I have a thing where, the handle, the long handle of like a pan, my husband's always like, do not leave it over, you know, over the counter. Do not, you're going to, you know, press it down and flip it over. I've done that.
Well, I've done it where I kind of had it and I turned on the wrong burner. And the handle got really hot and I burned my hand. So those damn handles.
Yep. And Molly's just really fed up with them. And she's like, none of your brothers caused this sort of trouble. Which is interesting selective memory, because I distinctly remember in last book when Percy finally became of age, he was doing all that sort of like useless apparating, unnecessary apparition just because he could.
That, I think Molly's trying to play them against each other a little bit, and I don't know. She kind of has a funny relationship with Fred and George anyway. So
Bill didn't need to apparate every few feet. Charlie didn't charm everything he met. Percy, and she stopped dead. Because she forgot how that they're estranged from Percy at the moment.
Oh, yeah. 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 Yeah.
And of course, it was the typical Weasley feast, courtesy of the matriarch Molly.
Right. Yeah. She's always in that role, isn't she?
Yep. And, you know, and again, it's not just the Weasleys. You know, Sirius is there, Remus is there, Tonks is there, like lots and lots of people are there. And, you know, Harry's looking over and he sees Tonks like doing a variety of like different noses. And she, apparently this was a regular mealtime entertainment, because after a while Hermione and Ginny started requesting their favorite noses.
Right. So, and I think Harry probably feels a little bit like a little jealous, but a little bit, you know, he kind of says later on, gets kind of happy and complacent, or feeling like, oh, I'm back with the people I like to be around. And so they've been doing these kinds of things for a little bit.
Yep. And we get a little snippet about, you know, Bill and Mr. Weasley and Remus theorizing about how the goblins will respond to Voldemort's return.
Yeah.
Which, not that they, and, you know, Remus rightly points out, it'll depend on what they're offered, because, you know, I don't think I'm giving really anything away here. Like, just like house elves, goblins are not allowed to have wands.
I didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah. And I don't, there's nothing that has said either or that like goblins like want wands or like could use wands but aren't allowed to. But yeah, that's that is a thing where it's like they don't, like, this Wizarding Society doesn't want anyone non-human having a wand.
Okay. Well, I guess that makes some sort of sense, a control thing in a way.
And then we've got Mundungus talking about his shady business dealings.
Yes. Yeah. There's kind of, you know, maybe this part is, seems like there's a lot of conversation, merriment, eating, loveliness, and then kind of the S gets real.
Yeah. They just had three helpings of rhubarb, crumble, and custard, and, you know, everything is all hunky-dory. And Miss Weasley's like, bedtime. And Sirius is like, nope, not yet. And he's like, why ain't you asking about Voldemort, Harry? And everything just, yeah.
Yeah.
Everyone's wide awake now. And, right. And Harry's like, I did. I asked Ron and Hermione, but they said they weren't allowed in the order. So, and they're quite right, said Mrs. Weasley. You're too young. She was sitting bolt upright in her chair, her fist clenched upon its arms, every trace of drowsiness gone. So, what do you think of the positions that, you know, Sirius and Molly represent, and who do you tend to be on? From a teenager to this day, and I probably always till the end of time, I am Team Siri is 100%.
I get where Molly's coming from. I really do. But I also, who is all this hubbub? Like, it's about Harry. And Harry just like was threatened. His life was threatened by this, you know, by Voldemort. So I side with Sirius as well. Like, the conversation is a little intense and I can understand where Molly's coming from. Like, Harry, you know, and Harry says he's flattered when she's like, he's like a son to me. And he kind of, that gives him a warm fuzzy, but in the same breath, he's like, but you need to tell me this stuff. This is like keeping me in the dark. It's not keeping him safe. And I think Molly's instinct is very maternal. You want to protect your kid from anything. And even, you know, a kid you have affection toward at all costs. But
yeah,
I don't agree with it.
Yeah, because how do I put this? Molly's position would make more sense in the context that this is the first big thing that Harry's had to deal with. But it's not. He's been having to deal with shit since he was like 11.
Right.
Yeah. And so this kid's innocence is already like gone.
Yeah.
Like you can't save him anymore.
He saw his friend die in front of him. Like, geez, Manitli. Like, good Lord. So.
And so, yeah. So, yeah, just the, you know, just morally, you know, regardless of this. But I also find it interesting, again, the implication of who legally has the say over Harry. And literally, this is, we, you know, well, Sirius is like to Fred and George, it's not my fault you haven't been told what the order's doing. That's your parents' decision. Harry, on the other hand, it's not down to you to decide what's good for Harry. And I'm just like, Sirius is Harry's legal guardian. Like, literally, there is a piece of parchment in Dumbledore's office saying, I, Sirius Black, as Harry Potter's godfather, give him permission to go to Hogsmeade on the weekends.
Right. So,
you know, and, you know, I don't think this is ever spelled out, or I, you know, I guess it depends on different people's headcanons, but my impression was that Dumbledore has no legal authority over Harry. It's just him, Dumbledore being Dumbledore, and, you know, collectively Wizarding Society trusting him, that they have just let Dumbledore do whatever he wants, like in regards to like Harry's like upbringing and stuff. And so it's just a funny thing, because again, legally, yes, Sirius does.
Yeah, right. He does. And as much as Molly probably wants to have some sort of jurisdiction over Harry, she doesn't. And Sirius kind of puts that in check. Like,
yeah. And, you know, no one's denying what he's done, so Mrs. Weasley. But yeah, she is. I think she is. You know, but aside from the he's not a child and he's not an adult, like question of maturity, but then Mrs. Weasley throws a low blow and she's like, he's not James, Sirius.
Yeah, this was kind of gross for Molly Weasley to hit below the belt here like that.
Yeah, I'm perfectly clear who he is. Thanks, Molly. I'm not sure you are. Sometimes, the way you talk about him, it's as though you think you've got your best friend back. It's
not a good look. I mean, all these characters kind of, at some point, make decisions that we don't like, but also kind of make them human, I think.
And,
they're all flawed.
You know, you are still at school, and adults responsible for you should not forget it. Meaning, I am an irresponsible godfather, demanded Sirius, his voice raising. Which is an interesting point, because it's quite it's for being on the run, like, for being on the run and the restricted circumstances he was in, Sirius was very much on the paternal, like, what were you doing, you know, talking to Victor Crumb by yourself, that was stupid, you gotta write to me, promise you will never do that again.
Right. I don't know. So kind of a surprisingly intense conversation for the adults to be having. I mean, we know they're adults and they have arguments and things like this, but this was just very, like, I was very uncomfortable reading this scene because I just imagined, like, being Hermione or Jenny, like, wanting to be like, you gotta tell us, you know. And I love that they point out, like, you know, let us stay, because even if you don't, Harry's gonna tell us everything anyway. And I loved that for a split second, Harry considered telling Ron that he wouldn't tell him a single word that he could try a taste of being kept in the dark and see how he liked it. But the nasty impulse vanished as they looked at each other. Again, very human, petty moment on Harry's part. And yeah, I thought that was, I'm glad he was honest in that moment with himself. Yeah.
And so between Mrs. Weasley and Sirius, Lupin kind of comes in at the, as the sort of like voice of reason and middle ground. And, you know, but Molly isn't done yet. She's just like, well, I can see I'm going to be overruled. I'll just say this. Dumbledore must have had his reasons for not wanting Harry to know too much. And speaking of someone who's got Harry's best interest at heart, he's not your son, said Sirius quietly. He's as good as, said Mrs. Weasley furiously. Who else has he got? He's got me. Yes, said Mrs. Weasley, her lip curling. The thing is, it's been rather difficult for you to look after him while you've been locked up in Azkaban, hasn't it?
And this gets Sirius out of his chair. He's pissed.
Yeah, it's, how do I put it? You know, Molly just doesn't want to acknowledge Sirius as an authority figure over Harry in any way, shape, or form.
Right, right.
And I sometimes wonder if this is coming from a little bit of, like, you know, jealousy from Molly, the fact that, you know, she's taken this kid in and, you know, cares about him. But of course, as a teenage boy gets older, who is going to be more appealing, this badass, you know, right, uncle, like, you know, godfather versus, you know, this coddling mother.
And right, so exactly.
So I think there is, you know, some sort of, you know, of course, Molly cares about Harry, but I think there is some sort of selfish, petty, like, fear of being replaced.
Yeah, probably. Probably. If they're honest, you know.
Mm-hmm. And Lupin and Remus is the one that's like, Molly, you're not the only person at this table who cares about Harry. Sirius, sit down.
Good for Lupin for kind of being like, okay, everybody, let's take a minute. And it got a little hot, but let's stop.
Yep. And so, as you said, like, you know, Fred and George are of age. They finally are there, allowed to stay. Ron and Hermione stay. And the only one that Molly can force upstairs is Ginny.
Which
she does not take graciously.
Yes, she doesn't. And they're going to tell her everything anyway. So
yeah, they're going to tell her everything anyway. At least Hermione will. And I just find it interesting, you know, it's like you're using the kids, as we see in the following chapter, as, you know, a free cleaning service.
Right. Yes, they are. Yes, for sure. Yeah.
And they can't know diddly squat.
Right, right. They don't know why they're like doing all these things. Yeah. I don't know. I am definitely team serious. Like, just let's all just be honest. In my opinion, that would probably serve everybody better. But
yeah. So we get a few things from the conversation. Basically, we're learning that Dumbledore is trying to stem the flow of Voldemort's recruitment efforts.
Yes. Yeah. And that's kind of what the biggest, you know, I think that it's good that they explain kind of the seriousness and the technique that they use. It's not something like, come join the Dark Lord. It's kind of like, so I've got some dirt on you. You're going to come join us, or are you not?
That
they spelled it out.
So yeah, trying to stem the flow of Voldemort's personal recruitment efforts. And then also a big portion of what they're doing is trying to spread the word about Voldemort returning, which is proving to be very difficult because of the position, as we saw in the last chapter or last book, that Cornelius Fudge is currently taking.
Right, right. Oh my gosh. Cornelius Fudge. You know, you talked a lot about kind of the comparison that was made for Cornelius Fudge and Trump.
Yes.
And this, the ministry's attitude toward Voldemort, and it's not really a thing. Oh my gosh, that gave me some flashbacks to 2020.
Yeah. Oh yeah. There's been so much discussed in podcasts now about the comparison of, you know, the early days of the pandemic and, you know, this sort of, you know, the return of Voldemort trying to say, hey, there's this really bad thing that's coming or has come, and people are just like, no, it's a hoax, pandemic, government wants to control us with fear, blah 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 blah.
Right. It's just, yeah, this is very, it all came together for me there.
Yeah, so it comes out, Fudge is frightened of Dumbledore. Frightened of what is up, Sue. You see, Fudge thinks Dumbledore is plotting to overthrow him. He thinks Dumbledore wants to be Minister of Magic. But Dumbledore doesn't want, of course he doesn't, said Mr. Weasley. He's never wanted the minister's job, even though a lot of people wanted him to when Miss Millicent Bagnold retired. Fudge came to power instead, but he's never quite forgotten how much popular support Dumbledore had, even though Dumbledore never applied for the job. Deep down, Fudge knows Dumbledore is much cleverer than he is, a much more powerful wizard, and in the early days of his ministry, he was forever asking Dumbledore for help and advice. Something that Hagrid has already told the kids in, like, a few books ago.
Yeah.
You know, but it seems he's become fond of power now and much more confident. He loves being Minister of Magic, and he's managed to convince himself that he's the clever one, and Dumbledore's simply stirring up trouble for the sake of it.
I mean, it makes me nauseous to think about the comparisons between, like, there's so many comparisons that can be made here. Mm-hmm. I'm not doing a hot, you know, unique take thinking that, but very interesting. And yeah, I've never got the impression that Dumbledore is really, you know, wanting to play the political game and get in a super position of power. He's a respected wizard and he's kind of fine with that from my understanding thus far.
Yeah, and he likes to just chill out at a castle in Scotland.
Yeah, because he's cool as hell. That's why.
Because he's awesome.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it's just really sad that you want to think Fudge's position is extraordinary or just super abnormal. But, you know, again, from how certain politicians have responded to the pandemic, it's not. In fact, one of the I remember when Amanda and Kevin were kind of in this area of the book, or maybe at the end of Goblet of Fire, where they made a mention of, there was this politician, I don't know if it was the governor, some politician in North Carolina who was like on the surface saying, oh, you know, it's just like the flu, this COVID thing, or it's not real, like downplaying it or flat out denying its existence. But while he was doing that, he was dumping all of his stock because he knew, like, with everything going on, that it was going to crash.
Oh my God. I think I vaguely remember some of those things at the beginning of the pandemic. It was like, ugh, it's very gross.
Yeah. So, you know, while the ministry insists that there's nothing to fear from Voldemort, it's hard to convince people he's back, especially as they really don't want to believe it in the first place. What's more, the ministry's leaning heavily on the Daily Prophet not to report anything what they're calling Dumbledore's rumor mongering. So most of the wizarding world are completely unaware of anything's happened, and this makes them easy targets for Death Eaters if they're using the Imperius Curse.
Makes
them easy targets for misinformation.
Again, the parallels, they're nonstop. And then I kind of appreciated too that the kind of, you know, Harry's like, you're telling people though, aren't you? And they're like, yeah, we are, but we are easily kind of discredited. Everybody thinks I'm a mass murderer. And Lupin's a werewolf. And, you know, Tonks and Arthur would lose their jobs if they started shooting their mouths off. So,
yeah, so they've got, and they're, it's critical that they keep some, at least a few people in the Ministry of Magic. So, you know, Arthur, Tonks, Kingsley, Shacklebolt, like all of them need to stay there. So they have to be quiet. And right. So really the only person, the person who has to take on the brunt of this sort of PR campaign is Dumbledore. And in retaliation, he's been voted off, like chief warlock of like the wizard gamut, and the wizard high court, and they're talking about taking away his Order of Merlin first class. And Bill is like, but Dumbledore says he doesn't care what they do as long as they don't take him off the chocolate frog carts.
I mean, can we not love Dumbledore anymore? This is my kind of guy. He's just like, whatever, as long as I stay on the cards, it's all good. And I like the confidence that somebody like that has, where I feel like Fudge is kind of spinning out, you know, like, oh my God. Dumbledore is kind of like, I know what I know. And, you know, I don't know. I appreciate confidence like that in a person, fictional or otherwise.
So in addition to, like, you know, trying to prevent Voldemort's recruitment and, you know, PR about Voldemort's return, we get at the very end that Voldemort is particularly interested in a certain weapon.
Yeah, and then Molly shuts that conversation down real quick before we get to know anything. Yeah, and she's like, that's it. Something worse than the Avacadabra, and then Molly shuts it down, and that was the end of the story. So
yeah, as like just by Harry like mentioning like death, and it's like he totally gets where this war and the implications of everything around him. So he's going straight to death.
Right. Yeah. Absolutely.
So basically, she shepherds them all, you know, up to bed. You can't boss us, Fred began. Watch me.
Oh my, Molly.
Yeah. And Harry's like, why not? I'll join. I want to join. I want to fight. No, it was not Mrs. Weasley who spoke this time, but Lupin. Which, yeah, like, you don't have use. Again, Harry's in that special position that you can technically deny him, like, membership as an order of stuff. But you, again, Voldemort is after this kid specifically. Therefore, you should not be denying him information.
Right. Yeah. Tell him information. He doesn't need to be on, like, the front line. Well, especially, he is a target. So, like, I don't know.
Yeah. And then, so yeah, and thus is the end of chapter 5.
Interesting.
And then we get chapter 6, The Noble and Most Ancient House of Black, which, you know, Molly ushers them all into their respective rooms, and they immediately start, like, whispering, like, what do you think it is? Like, you know, what could it be? And Fred and George apparate. It's like, landed on my knees. Yeah, well, it's harder in the dark.
That's, yeah, of course they're all over the place. I don't know. What could be worse than the Avacadabra curse? And maybe it's something loads. So they're speculating again about.
Like, honestly, it makes me think could kill loads of people at once, suggested George, like a wizard nuclear bomb.
Yeah, like, oh my God. I don't know. They're really. And I have no idea what this is. So
yeah, one of my questions was, you know, you had any theories at all of what this possible weapon could be?
My best thought is at this point in time, is it some creature that we have not met yet or don't know about, but I don't know.
Interesting. Yeah, put a pin in that. We'll get back to it. And he's like, it's a weapon's going to be hard to, like, hide or conceal. And George is just like, not necessarily. Yeah, size is no guarantee of power, said George. Look at Ginny.
We're giving some props to Jenny, finally, which, you know, I think we haven't. Again, she's kind of been in the shadows.
Yeah, she's been on the periphery for a good 2 books now.
Right.
And, you know, and again, I think we're starting to see, like, who brings this up but Fred and George. And again, my personal headcanon is that Ginny is substantially closer to Fred and George than she is to Ron.
They say you've never been on the receiving end of one of her bat bogey hexes, have you? I didn't really, maybe this is just me being obtuse, but I didn't realize, like, they could be, one wizard could be more powerful or whatever than the other, which sounds like a really stupid thing to say, but
it hasn't been fully spelled out. And then there are maybe, you know, there are wizards that, you know, just sheer power. Yeah, there's some like Dumbledore and, you know, things like that. And then there are witches and wizards who naturally have specific strengths and stuff. Like, maybe Sirius can't make a wolfsbane potion like Snape can, but he could go through the very complicated process and now can transform into a dog at will.
Right.
So yeah, so like
Yeah. Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
No, just the, again, just the different branches of magic. They're really, they're literally treated as different, like fields of science.
That's, and I like that they're talking about how Jenny is like super smart, because Hermione has been talked about as very smart. I feel like we haven't seen a lot of female wizards with, a younger age.
Yeah, it's not directly spelled out, like, how much, again, the nature of nurture, like, you know, how much of is Hermione's or Ginny's gift abilities purely based on, you know, their willingness to study and how much they study, or if it's some innate ability that they already had.
That's, I guess, that's kind of the question. I guess, you know, it's applicable to, like, some people are just better students than others. So I don't know. A very interesting comment. And then,
Yep. And then they hear Molly coming back up the stairs to check on them. And Fred and George peace out. And Harry eventually falls asleep and he gets a dream. And it's Hagrid, care of magical creatures. Beautiful beauties, aren't they, Harry? We'll be studying weapons this term and they have cannon heads.
Okay, so that must have been where I was like, it's a creature because of Harry's dream. So that's what I was thinking about. But
yep. Next thing he knew, he was curled up in a warm ball under his plain bedclothes, and George's loud voice was filling the room. Mom says, get up, your breakfast is in the kitchen, and she needs you in the drawing room. There are loads more doxies, and she thinks she's found a nest of dead puffskins under the sofa.
This is quite the disgusting, like, I'm just assuming these are, like, bugs, in a magical sense. They're creatures.
I've actually do have the original Fantastic Beast and Where to Find Them, like the textbook that just has the list of all the creatures. And the doxies are basically, they're basically like little fairies, like little humanoid bodies covered in black fur. And then they have extra sets of arms and legs.
Huh. Okay. Cool.
Yeah. So they're in the curtains. And what do we got? You know, Mrs. Weasley has doxicide. I've never seen an infestation this bad. What that health house been doing for the last 10 years? And Hermione's like, you know, creature's really old. He probably couldn't manage. You'd be surprised what creature can manage when he wants to, Hermione, said Sirius.
This is really interesting that Hermione is very forgiving of house elves and whatever they seem to do. And very, I would say she is not as forgiving to her like human counterparts. Creature's kind of an ass, which she doesn't know that yet, but
yeah. Let's see, what do we got? And well, Molly, I'm pretty sure this is a Boggart, but perhaps we ought to let Mad-Eye have a shifty at it before we let it out. Right you are, Sirius. They were both speaking in carefully light, polite voices that told Harry quite plainly that neither had forgotten their disagreement of the night before.
Oh goodness. I don't know what that's like at all.
And so yeah, they're just, you know, what do we got here? It's Kingsley's shown up, and you know, Walburga Black starts screaming in her portrait, stains of dishonor, filthy half-breeds, children of filth. Close the door, please, Harry. And Harry like is like about to close the door, and he hears Kingsley say, Hestia's just relieved me, so she's got Moody's cloak now. Thought I'd leave a report for Dumbledore.
Oh my.
Mm-hmm. And Mrs. Weasley was bending over to check the page on doxies and Gilderoy Lockhart's Guide to Household Pests.
Oh,
she has the books.
I can't. She will not quit him. That's okay, Mrs. Weasley. That's okay.
Not that they probably aren't informative, but it's just Lockhart took all that information from someone else.
Right. That's kind of an interesting question. Like how far did that news get outside of Hogwarts? But I don't know. Yeah. I guess he probably hasn't published anything for quite a while.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So basically got all these like spray bottles, and again, very cleaning-esque. Again, what you were saying, you were doing, I was doing too.
Yes.
Although I had no doxies whatsoever in my curtains, I'm happy to say.
Thankfully, I did not either. That would be very upsetting. Ron experiences a very upsetting moment here that I think we all know by this point that I would do the same thing and go get a cup of tea, but that's later.
That's later. And so in this chaos of trying to get all the doxies, Harry sneaks over to Fred and George, who are telling him about their joke shop endeavors.
Right. They're like, they're appreciative of his money, and they're trying to make these ridiculous things that make you sick for a little bit to get out of a class you don't want to get out of, and then take another mm-hmm. thing and you're fine.
Yeah, which restores you to full fitness, enabling you to pursue the leisure activity of your own choice during an hour that would have otherwise been devoted to unprofitable boredom.
I could take a couple of those, and I don't know. I still have to work. I'm an adult, so I can't go to class.
You know, there was an interesting anti-work like video essay I was watching on YouTube, and one quote, I forget who said it, that they mentioned was that literally in a lot of ways, work is just like daycare for adults.
Mm.
And it's probably not wholly a coincidence that, you know, by having adults at this daycare of work for most of the time, that they have substantially less time to be politically active for all that's wrong in the world.
That's very interesting. That's very interesting.
So anyway, so they're at this point, they don't have a whole like a premise. They don't have a location, but they're operating as a mail order service and even have ads in the Daily Prophet.
Wow. Yeah. They're doing
again. I so wish I could do the same for my cupcake business.
But alas,
but alas, the regulations and laws are such that if you cook anything in a home kitchen, then you can only sell it on the side of the road or at specific farmers markets. Like, you could not like do a mail order or have people pick it up at your house or like, but everyone, all my coworkers say they're delicious. And even one finally like asked me like, when are you going to open your cupcakery, Amy?
I would love for that as well. I would love for some, if they traveled well, that would be great as well. So
yeah, the cupcake cauldron.
The cupcake. I like it. That's very cool.
With lots of cats. Cat cafe too, with adorable kitties.
I love our cat cafe here. So that's great.
Anyway, so yeah. So George and Fred are at it, and Harry's very pleased to hear that. And then they continue with the de-doxing, and no, the curtains were no longer buzzing. They hum limp and damp. And so I think we'll tackle those after lunch. And is it here we get... So first, they're about to have lunch, and they see Mundungus come in, like, with all these cauldrons. And it's, like, it's so obvious. He's trying to, like, find a place to stash these stolen cauldrons.
Oh, my God. Him and these... And then he and Molly kind of have some words, right?
Yeah, we are not running a hideout for stolen goods. And Fred is like, I love hearing Mom shouting at someone else. It makes such a nice change.
poor Fred and George, but that's all right.
Yep. And then right after this, we finally get Creature in the flesh.
Whew, Creature.
How do you feel about Creature in comparison to Dobby?
I mean, Dobby's like a little church mouse or whatever. Dobby. I always want to call her she. Anyway, sorry. Creature is something else. I did not know that house elves could have specific prejudices, but it definitely makes sense. You know, they're not just, he definitely feels a certain kind of way about all the non-pure blood wizards in that house. And he and Sirius are not, I'll just say they're not real fond of each other because of Creature's fondness for Sirius's mother too.
Yeah, and so are you? What side of the fence are you on? Do you think Creature is, you know, is senile to the point that he doesn't realize people can hear him, or does he think he's just pretending to and he just says what he wants?
I think he just doesn't give a shit. Like, I think he's just old and crotchety. I mean, I know old crotchety people that. Sorry. I know old crotchety people that are like that. So that's what I think. I don't think he's like, I think he's fine. Like, mm-hmm. I think he's just pissed and old and mad.
Yeah. And, you know, Hermione is trying to be nice to him, and Creature is just like, the mudblood is talking to Creature as though she is my friend. If Creature's mistress saw him in such company, oh, what would she say?
Oh, what a nightmare this guy is.
And Hermione's just like, it doesn't matter. He's not right. He's not in the right mind. He doesn't know what he... Don't kid yourself, Hermione. He knows exactly what he's saying.
I would agree with that. I think he knows. And yeah, Hermione is very forgiving of his curmudgeoniness. Yep.
And Sirius comes in and is like, what are you up to? Creature is cleaning, the elf responded. Creature lives to serve the noble House of Black, and it's getting blacker every day. It's filthy. Master always liked his little joke. And, you know, basically, you know, it's, you know, kind of, you know, it's kind of implied or basically said that Creature has been trying to, like, smuggle certain things out. And his specific thing he was looking at was the tapestry. And Sirius is just like, she'll have put another permanent sticking charm on the back of it. But if I find a way to remove it, I certainly will.
This tapestry is something else, too. Very interesting.
So, all the, you know, Molly finally comes, still red in the face from screaming her lungs out at Mundungus. And, you know, everyone goes to their sandwiches. But Harry sticks around with Sirius and looking at this huge tapestry. And it literally dates back to the Middle Ages. The noble and most ancient House of Black, toujours pur, which, pretty obvious, but in French that means always pure.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And Harry's like, you're not here. And Sirius is like, I used to be, but my sweet old mother blasted me off after I ran away from home. So what'd you think of Sirius and his dynamic with his relatives?
You know, I know some black sheep in my family, in my life. So, pretty intense to have this tapestry up and kind of blast their photos out. It's funny. I liked the scene because he'll be like, oh, that one's gone too. And just kind of like going through all those people and how they've been removed from that. But I do like that Sirius and his mother's relationship isn't good. We're kind of talking about a mother in a way that's like not, you know, kind of the opposite of Molly Weasley, I guess. Mm-hmm. I mean, and that's okay. And I appreciate Sirius was like, this is wrong and I'm peacing out. So good for him.
Mm-hmm. And so, and then we realized that Sirius had a brother.
Yes. What is his name? It was something close.
Regulus Black.
Regulus.
And he was younger than me, and a much better son, as I was constantly reminded. But he died, said Harry. Yeah, stupid idiot. He joined the Death Eaters.
Stupid idiot.
Yeah, and Harry's like, was he killed by an Auror? No, he was murdered by Voldemort, or on Voldemort's orders, more likely. So Sirius seems to summarize this as, you know, Regulus wasn't cool with whatever he was being asked to do or kill someone. And as he said, you don't just hand in your resignation to Voldemort. It's a lifetime of service or death.
And then Molly breaks that conversation with Lunch. But interesting, I feel like this will not be the last I hear about Regulus. So I just feel like I won't be.
Mm-hmm. Sirius goes into other relatives. Phineas Nigellus, my great-great grandfather, least popular headmaster Hogwarts ever had. And I see Tonks isn't on here. Maybe that's why Creature won't take orders from her. So what did you think that finding out that Tonks is actually related to Sirius?
It was very interesting. Because several are related. Tonks, that was interesting. And then, you know, as we go further down in the bloodline, you know, the Malfoys are related. And then Sirius kind of makes it feels very obvious when he says it's like, well, yeah, if they're wanting to keep these lines pure blood, there's only so many families to like keep it pure blood. This is very like, royalty.
This very yes. royalty. And they're literally getting to the point that if they would want to be pure blood in like probably just a century or two, they would have to go the like Targaryen sibling crap.
Yikes. Like that's I'm glad we're not doing that. But we do see some names that I know, you know, like Harry remembered he had seen Bellatrix Lestrange inside Dumbledore's pensive. So he's putting some things together based on this
Yeah. Giant so family I guess tree. The most important, you know, kind of relatives that are relevant, you know, in relation to Sirius is, so Sirius is first, he had three female cousins, his first cousins, Bellatrix Black, who was the oldest, who married Rodolphus Lestrange, and she went crazy and evil and ended up in Azkaban. Then we've got the middle child cousin, Andromeda, who married a muggle-born Ted Tonks, and, you know, her daughter is Nymphadora Tonks.
Okay.
And then we've got
Narcissa.
And then and then Narcissa is the youngest girl, you know, of Sirius's cousins, and she married Lucius Malfoy, and that is Draco's mother.
Yeah, so Sirius is related to Lucius Malfoy and Draco.
Yeah, why is my sister calling me? She knows I podcast on Monday nights.
Well, if you need to go, no, that's fine. Okay.
No, please. No, she knows. She knows better. But anyway, so yeah, so those are kind of the important ones that all of the three cousins of that female cousins that Sirius had are all like relevant to, like, again, with the Malfoys and Tonks, and then of course Bellatrix.
Yeah, pretty interesting reveal that I felt kind of like, oh well, that only makes sense after it was kind of spelled out there.
Yeah, and Sirius is just like, I don't like being back here, he said, staring across the drawing room. I never thought I'd be stuck in this house again. Harry understood completely. He knew how he would feel if he was forced when he was grown up and thought he was free of a place forever to return and live at number 4 Privet Drive.
Well, glad he can relate to that.
Yep. And then, you know, he starts thinking about, you know, the hearing, and Sirius is like, don't worry, I'm sure there's something in the International Statute of Secrecy about being allowed to use magic to save your own life. But if they do expel me, said Harry quietly, can I come back here and live with you?
Yeah, and Sirius doesn't really give him a yes or no. He's kind of like, we'll see. Which is kind of like, oh, what kind of, yeah. I can't really figure out why the insistence that he stay at Privet Drive, but yeah.
Yep, and you know, Harry basically tries to distract himself from all the hearing talk with all of the cleaning that they're doing. You know, they found an unpleasant looking silver instrument, something like a many legged pair of tweezers, which scuttled up Harry's arm like a spider. When he picked it up and attempted to puncture his skin, Sirius seized it and smashed it with a heavy book entitled Nature's Nobility, A Wizarding Genealogy. There was a musical box that emitted a faintly sinister tinkling tune when wound that all of them found themselves becoming curiously weak and sleepy until Ginny had the sense to slam the lid shut. Which is funny, Ginny of all people has the sense after her experience with the diary.
Right. She's, yeah.
Yep. And funny. Then what, and they also find a heavy locket that none of them could open, a number of ancient seals, and in a dusty box, an Order of Merlin First Class that had been awarded to Sirius's grandfather for services to the ministry. It means he gave them a lot of gold, said Sirius contemptuously. And so, yeah, they're throwing all this shit out. Creatures trying to save some of it. And, you know, when Sirius, like, stops him from saving a ring with the black crest, like, Creature gives up sobbing, like, and calling Sirius names Harry had never heard before.
Yeah, I was kind of curious what those names were, but...
I fought in your general direction. Your mother was a hamster, and your father smelt of elderberries.
He went full Monty Python, but hey, that's fine.
Well, no, he wouldn't, because he loved Walburga Black, so...
Oh, yes, yeah.
Yes, and Mrs. Weasley kept them all working very hard, and they moved from the drawing room to the dining room on the ground floor, and they found spiders' largest saucers lurking in the dresser, and Ron left the room hurriedly to make a cup of tea and did not return for an hour and a half.
I'd be hanging out with Ron.
Yeah, Snape might have referred to their work as cleaning, but in Harry's opinion, they were really waging a war on the house, which was putting up a very good fight, aided and abetted by Creature.
Yeah, this does sound like comparatively to the cleaning that I did today, this is much more intense.
Yep, and then Mundungus is able to redeem himself a little bit by saving Ron from some strangling robes.
You know, whatever it takes.
Yep, and Lupin helps out with a grandfather clock that liked to shoot nuts and bolts at people as they pass by.
It's just, I feel like, I mean, I guess this is, these are wizard objects, not muggle enchanted. Well, they're kind of enchanted muggle objects in a way, mm-hmm. but anyway.
Yep. And then, you know, Harry's saying as long as he can keep himself like distracted, he doesn't have to think about the hearing. But finally, he gets to rest and they come, we're at the night before the hearing. And Molly's like, I've ironed your best clothes. Make sure to wash your hair, blah, blah, blah. And Harry's like, how am I getting there? And Arthur's going to take you to work with him. You can wait in my office until it's time for the hearing. And Harry looked over at Sirius, but before he could ask the question, Mrs. Weasley had answered it. Professor Dumbledore doesn't think it's a good idea for Sirius to go with you. Sad.
Yeah, and Sirius agrees. He even like, well, of course he floated the idea by of going as Snuffles, is that right?
I don't know. Yeah, that's one of his nicknames, but
okay.
Padfoot the dog.
Padfoot, yes.
Yeah. Yeah, and then Harry, we leave on the note that the thought that Dumbledore had been in the house on the eve of his hearing and not asked to see him made him feel, if that was possible, even worse.
Yeah. Yeah. Ugh. Drama. We kind of...
Dumbledore be seriously ghosting Harry.
Yeah. I don't know what the hell's going on there, but I'm sure he has his reasons. I trust he does.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And those are our two chapters. Lots of background about, you know, again, specifically a very beloved fan favorite, Sirius Black.
Yes, lots of Sirius Black and kind of, and also just, I thought what was really important in those chapters were the lineage of the pureblood wizards. It's pretty interesting.
Yeah, because again, they basically treat themselves as like, you know, royals who were they didn't specify like in this book, but if you look on, and don't look online, I don't want you to be accidentally spoiled by anything, but if you look online to the full extensive, there is the full extensive Black family tree, you'll realize that that Sirius's parents, his mother and father, were second cousins. They were both Blacks. In the same way that Cersei, Jaime, and Tyrion's parents were cousins.
Oh, man. Wow. Intense.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So let us get in to Gothic Geek Out.
It is hard and to not say Sirius's house or number 12 Grimmauld Place, so that's what I'm going to say. I mean, they spent all this time basically cleaning up a haunted house, so.
Yes, literally, you know, basically, if you had a business of, like, cleaning haunted houses, like, this is what it would be, because, oh, and we didn't even mention the murderous ghoul in the toilet.
Yes, yeah, we forgot about that. There are all these little, like, you know, Bogarts and ghouls popping out and all of that, so yeah, that it is. I thought about if I were to create, like, we have several very popular haunted houses where I live, and if I were to create a Harry Potter haunted house, this would be it.
Yeah, there actually is a strong haunted house tradition in the Midwest.
Yeah. I haven't been to the big ones here because they're very expensive, but
yeah, like, you know, that's why I didn't end up going to the you know, this Waverly Hills Sanatorium, which is supposed to be the most haunted place in the U.S.
Oh man. Yeah, you know, yeah,
the old TB sanatorium where they would dump the bodies in the chute.
Oh man, that's I want to go, but
anyway, so again, of course, Sirius's house, number 12, Grimmauld Place,
The Grimmauld Place, yes.
To hone in specifically, because there were many examples, I honed in on the Black family tapestry. That is sort of the, like, same as the portrait in Castle of Otranto. It is the family legacy, you know, manifested, like, in a sort of, like, again, not painting, but in a tapestry. But also, it seems to be the thing in this house that haunts Sirius the most. Because this tapestry not only shows just people in his family that he doesn't like and that he doesn't get along with, but just the nature of this family tree, it is also emblematic of the pure blood, you know, ideals.
Right.
of pure blood, you know, supremacy, and that your pedigree and your genealogy is everything. And that's so both like personally and familiarly and ideologically, it's just everything that Sirius doesn't like about the place where he came from.
Right. Yeah. It's all kind of in his face. And it's very kind of gothic romance that we've talked about, the family, the dark family history. So,
of course. Any other gothic points?
No, I mean, I think it was, I knew right away it was going to be the Black's house. So,
of course. And now we move on to Tarot of the Day, which the card I picked at random was Seven of Pentacles, of all things.
All right.
The Seven of Pentacles shows you understand the value of putting in time and energy now for longer term rewards and have a strong desire to invest in sustainable results. You are not looking for quick wins. You want to make sure you are putting your attention on the right areas instead of wasting time and effort on tasks that will not deliver any value.
I think that's cleaning up the house. Like, that seems to be pretty on the nose right there.
Yeah, just the sense of... It's they're not cleaning up this house for the hell of it. They're cleaning it up because it is going to be the base for the entire resistance against what is considered the most dangerous dark wizard of the 20th century.
Right, right. Yeah.
Yep. It's like, when this card appears in a tarot reading, see it as an invitation to step back from day-to-day operations and look at the bigger picture. Celebrate what you have created and assess your progress so far. Are you on track? Are you focused on the right task for your goal? So I think this is about, you know, again, Harry being in a certain type of mindset and not being distracted by everyday things. I think this is very much in chapter 5 of Harry trying to figure out what the hell is going on. Like, you know, I don't want to, you know, it's nice, you know, seeing my friends. It's nice seeing everyone, but what the hell?
Right, right. Yeah. But yeah, it's agreed. Agreed.
Mm-hmm. Then what else? Is there anything? Sometimes, however, the Seven of Pentacles can indicate frustration with slow results. You have been laboring away at something important and you may feel concerned that your efforts will go unrewarded. Be patient and appreciate the progress you have made so far. If your work has not paid off as planned, remember that your expectations may be unreasonable. There are no guarantees. Be grateful, focus on the present, and do what you can with what you have. Which, I'm sure Harry feels to a certain extent in terms of... the information he feels is being withheld from him.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, you know, they got some information and I feel like they didn't get all the information that they could have got quite yet. Mm-hmm. So looking at the bigger picture, I'm just focusing on the cleaning up of the house, because the cleaning up of the house is like the bigger picture of later, this will be the like home base. So removing mm-hmm. all this junk and whatever is kind of, I guess maybe as a lazy cleaner myself, is like, it's pain to do it, but long term you're grateful that you did. So.
And you think of, oh, they're wizards, just cleaning a house is easy. But the thing is that they, like, whatever inconveniences or problems with house stuff that we have, that's just amplified because there's magical stuff. And so the level of effort that they have to put in is just as, it's just as arduous and time consuming and energy sapping as a normal person just cleaning a normal dilapidated house.
I'm glad you said that, because you're exactly right. Like, that I'm, you know, waving a wand and getting things clean. I think everybody has imagined that at one point in time. They wish they could do that, but so probably could do that in the wizarding world, but there's also like things like these little, you know, critters hiding or giant spiders in drawers. I mean, anyway, which is terrifying to me.
And senile house elves insulting you.
Senile house elves making racist comments constantly. That's a bother. So.
Yep. Alrighty then. So now we can move on to our oracle card of the day. So let me just go grab my little booklet with definitions.
All right.
So the card I pulled out at random this time is a astrological sign. It is card number 13, Aries.
Aries, all right.
Aries, the first, you know, sign in the Western Zodiac from March 21st to April 19th. The Aries card says that it's okay to push now, just don't push too hard. Aries is the first sign in the zodiac, and the energy of this card is of that of a dynamic trailblazer. Aries is the fire of creation. This means Arians can be highly creative. Since they are impatient, they're also blunt and to the point. They make no effort to pretend to be something other than what they are. Traditionally, Aries is a warrior sign, which means always being on the defensive, ready for action. The Aries style of relating is a catalyst using force and not of a peacemaker. When this card turns up, expect things to move fast, for there is no time to take it step by step. It will all be a mad jump. It may be a time of testing your will. Go ahead.
I feel like Molly Weasley channeled some very Aries energy in these two chapters.
And I think Harry himself also had a lot of channeled a lot of Aries energies, and which is not totally out of place because Harry's moon sign is Aries.
Oh, there we go. Okay. Well, mm-hmm.
And then his rising sign is Sagittarius, as we discussed. So like all of his three major ones are all fire.
All fire. Okay. So yeah, I guess, I kind of felt like the adults in these two chapters kind of took a main, spotlight.
I think certainly both Sirius and Molly in their fight, but also Harry just not willing to let it go.
Right. Yeah. That is very fiery of him.
Mm-hmm. And I'm just trying to think, is there anything else? Be advised to think beyond acting with aggression, especially in emotional dramas. In relationships, you or your partner will expect total freedom. However, avoid being quick-tempered, because when this card turns up, there's a need for caution. Be steady and measured rather than hot-blooded or impulsive. So, yeah, well, this is sign of cautioning. This marks a time when you need to be sensitive to the concerns of others, since you will want to move fast and strong without thinking this through. Again, the only person who heeds this advice is Lupin.
Right, yes. Yeah, he is the voice of reason in these, in this chapter.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, lots. I think Harry always does and always will exude lots of Aries energy.
Fire Aries energy, yeah. Yeah.
Yep. Alrighty then. And then we move on to our last exercise. Fan fiction time!
For some reason, I really struggled with this, but the only thing I could kind of come up with is, what if they still kept Harry and everybody else like in the dark? What if Molly won kind of that battle and was like, no, it's not happening. And they kind of got pushed away. I feel like conversations would slip and they would find out anyway.
Yeah, like, and that's literally kind of Lupin's point. In him saying it's better for Harry to hear it from us than a garbled version from others.
Yeah, right.
So like Lupin, both in accepting Harry's, maturity, but also kind of in accepting the inevitable. Because, with Apparition and Flu Network, like if Molly really wanted to keep them in the dark, like, we have the Flu Network with fireplaces or even just, lots of things like, the kids didn't have to live there.
Right. True. Yeah.
Like you were having the kids live there. Like right. You could get them clean and then send them home at 5 p.m.
Right. Right. Yeah. That's true.
I know. I'm really very much like, they're totally exploiting these kids.
The child labor laws are being violated during these chapters.
Yeah.
So, yeah. That's true.
Yeah. So yeah. If they would have found out some things, would they have found out the same things that remains to be seen? And I think that might, I don't know how fair this is to presume of Harry, but honestly, I'm with Hermione that even to deny him information, Harry would be driven to do something stupid.
Yeah, and I think, again, to your point.
Honestly, like, I think of a scenario where Harry just, like, walks out and doesn't tell anyone and just goes, like, screw all of you if I'm considered, like, a little child who can't be trusted.
Yeah, that could see him do that, too. And I think that the point that you made about, like, getting garbled information and, that to me, it could be much more damaging And, you know, you speculate when you get bits of information and tie things together. And Harry could do something very fiery, very Aries of him, and just be like, you know what, screw this, and put himself and probably his friends in danger. So good thing that scenario did not happen.
Yeah. My ex-best friend in middle school, she was an Aries. Our birthdays were very close, but she was the Aries and I was the Taurus. And which made sense because she was kind of the quote unquote leader of our little posse. But again, Tauruses can be quite lazy, but if you mess with us, do not disturb our nap time. Otherwise, you're going to get it.
Right.
Yeah. So my fanfic scenario, again, does go back to that argument, but it's more what if the argument between Sirius and Molly had escalated even further?
Oh, gosh. It was pretty uncomfortable as it was, but
yeah, it was already pretty uncomfortable. What if it got to maybe not to the point of, you know, shooting curses or spells at each other, but what if, you know, Molly and Sirius, you know, continued? Because it literally, there's nothing that Sirius says that is like demeaning to Molly as like a mother or a parent, but Molly is totally willing to, like, you know, throw shade at Sirius that's irrelevant.
Right. I'm sure some more nasty things would come out, and I bet the kids would learn things about the adults in the room that they probably didn't really.
Yeah, because I'm trying to think, you know, just what I know personally, that, you know, Molly and Arthur are 7+ years older than like Sirius and Remus and like those people. And so that means they never would have gone to school together, but you know, they never would have gone to been at Hogwarts together. But I do like the idea that, you know, if Molly kept pushing it, that Sirius would eventually, you know, throw something unflattering about Molly, you know, out there, and all the kids would be like, what?
Yeah. I'm sure they could get some really low blows, and I think it could have got, I mean, it was pretty not nice as it was, and then, you know, take
yeah,
it
Yeah, and
further.
Honestly, I think even if not, quote-unquote, a decision was made, I think, you know, if things escalated, then things, you know, obviously no one was going to talk about, you know, anything that night, so either Harry's getting any information would have been at least very least delayed, if not downright, you know, denied.
Yeah.
And again, there is also this sense of, again, it just rubs me the wrong way of Molly. Again, Molly denying Sirius's like legal guardianship over Harry when they're in his legal, like the house that he legally owns and is giving to them for the, you know, for the Order of the Phoenix.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, they need to back off there. I don't know. I guess, you know, again, with Molly's maternal instinct toward Harry kind of got the better of her in that situation.
Yeah. Ooh, excuse me. But that was just my thoughts of if things got even nastier during that fight. But again, have been and always will be Team Sirius in that debate.
I'm right there with you.
Alrighty then, and thus concludes this episode of Rambling Raven Puffs. Tune in next week, and we will go over chapters 7 and 8, The Ministry of Magic and The Hearing.
Oh.
Our first ever foray into the Ministry of Magic itself. We've never been there.
Oh, yeah.
Cool. Yeah. Alrighty then, catch you guys later. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Rambling Raven Puffs. Our theme music was composed by John Williams, recreated by Kinez Norwar. This podcast is but one of the many shows produced by Sophie Mare Studios. You can get the latest news by following our social media, Sophie Mare Studios on Instagram, Sophie Mare Studios on TikTok, and SophieMare_pods on Twitter. You can connect with other listeners through the Sophie Mare Studios Discord server. You can support the show by becoming a patron at patreon.com/SophieMareStudios, all lowercase. Higher tiers get access to even cooler perks.
that was the Sophia Mayer Studios podcast.